And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
This week, we have two co-hosts for the price of one. And the price of one is zero. We don't charge for the show. Not yet, anyway. Some people have been suggesting that, by the way. That instead of actually giving away a free show with commercials, because that's how you pay the bills, we charge for the show. Now, I don't know about you, but I kind of think that I wouldn't ask anybody to pay for a radio show. Because, you know, everybody has only so much money to spend. Look, we have to have commercials. If you don't like the commercials, you do what you do on your DVRs, on your TV sets. You fast forward. The co-hosts are Chris O'Brien and Nicholas Redfern, who's rejoining us after a short absence. And he'll tell us what he's been up to in a few moments. He has a book out, by the way, called The NASA Conspiracies. And
very
boy,
good book.
There's a list of stuff here. I don't know if we're going to get to all of it. We may have to make this a double show. But, Nick, before we go on to anything else, one of the things that I'd like to talk about is the fact that, you know, because you haven't been here a while, and every time we have a guest on, a co-host, we kind of like to ask, hey, what have you been up to lately? And maybe you could possibly tell us how you spent your summer vacation. What have you been doing the last few weeks since we last heard from you?
Well, as far as my summer vacation is concerned, as you well know, Gene, we spoke off air, and no, I cannot discuss that in this show at all. But hopefully if we get more of an not a more entertaining, but a more diverse show at some point, which covers other realms and other areas, then I'll perhaps be able to astonish the listeners with a few breakthroughs in that area, shall we say. I will leave it at that for now on my summer vacation. But, I mean, that aside, I do a lot of work outside of the whole paranormal realm. A lot of people don't realize that. I do a lot of ghostwriting for authors on all sorts of subjects, you know, that have no bearing on the paranormal. It's just sort of one of the side projects I have. You know, when you're a freelance writer and, you know, write books, a lot of people think, you know, you write a couple of books and you're driving around in a Corvette or something and, you know, living in Beverly Hills or whatever, and the reality isn't quite like that. The reality I enjoy what I do, but it's like, you know, every day is like a struggle, you know. I mean, I'm not complaining because I actually enjoy that, the lifestyle of having to pitch articles and sell ideas, and, you know, every day is a bit different, but it's, unless you're sort of J.K. Rowling or Stephen King, you know, it's freelance writing is a hazardous job. And so, you know, I'm always sort of pitching for new ideas and anything that's writing related. And I also do a lot of writing for medical attorney-based companies, you know, where you people have had medical problems through prescription drugs. You know, I do a lot of writing in that field. And also just wrapped up a manuscript on the Men in Black, which will be published next May. Now, I wrote a book about 4 years ago called On the Trail of the Saucer Spies, which was how government agencies secretly watch people in the UFO field. But this, and that was more from the government angle, but this new book will be sort of addressing more the whole Kiel, Barker, Bender aspect of the Men in Black. In other words, you know, the paranormal, supernatural aspects and overtones that go along with the whole MIB thing, rather than just, you know, government, quote, secret agents or whatever. So that's what's been keeping me busy the last few months.
Now, I'm going to ask you one thing as a hint, and you can say, you know what, wait for the book. But in doing this sort of thing, do you think that you found any providence for all this Men in Black stuff, that there's really something to it?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that there is. You know, I'm absolutely convinced of that. You know, I mean, and I've been convinced for a long time. That's one of the reasons I wanted to write this particular book. You know, it's, a lot of people either take the view that there's nothing to the Men in Black stories, that it's all hoaxing or Walter Mitty type UFO research, you know, overstepping the mark and banging on someone's door and saying, I read your article in a, or your story in a newspaper, and please give me all the details. And, you know, every UFO group wants the scoops, so they may have said occasionally, don't tell, you know, this group or that group, and then people think they've been visited by the Men in Black. Or it's, you know, hoaxing, et cetera, et cetera, or it's all government people. But the more I've dug into it, the more I've found that there seems to be a very sinister aspect to a lot of MIB stories that go beyond, far beyond, you know, the whole idea of government personnel, and which touch upon everything from, like, tolpers, tricksters, paranormal aspects, weird synchronicities, you know, with these strange characters just kind of materializing out of nowhere and almost seem like temporary entities is the best way I can describe them.
You know, it sounds to me like this is the entire so-called John Keel syndrome.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do, you know, Keel is a person like Vallée who I have a great deal of respect for in their writings and conclusions. And I think the simplistic approach that MIB reports are hoaxes or government agents is so far away from the reality of the situation to be almost laughable that I think we're dealing with a phenomenon that's very difficult to comprehend. But to me, it's almost as if the angle of warning the witnesses not to talk about UFO encounters is secondary. I think the primary focus is instilling fear in the person. And I think one of the things I talk about in the book is the idea of these being sort of predatory paranormal entities that may feed on emotion and fear.
Is an invitation to being chased. That's what John Keel said. So if you fear something, you can cause it to come your way.
Yes, and also I think these entities, as I point out in the book, you know, I think fear is a key component of their existence, almost like tulpas that feed on high states of emotion. I think, you know, the threat and the warning is secondary to the emotional state that the threat creates in the person. I think that's why we even get reports of MIB turning up in truly innocuous, you know, UFO cases of no real merit, because it's not the case that's important. What's important is instilling this shock factor in the witness that I think these MIB somehow almost like prey upon. And I mean, I know that's a controversial theory, but I think I've been able to put together a lot of evidence suggesting that, you know, these entities could be the same ones that 500 years ago were responsible for tales of, like, predatory vampires and things like that. It's all to do with entities that seem to be somehow feeding upon the human psyche, if you like.
Well, I'll tell you what, that is not going to be the topic of this week's discussion. How about that, yeah, ladies and gentlemen? But you know what? That tantalizes us, because we kind of think, you know what, when that book is out, you're going to be back, and we're going to explore that in far more detail. And maybe at that time we'll bring on my friend Alan Greenfield, or perhaps Jim Moseley, to also talk about their understanding of the Men in Black lore. So, anyway, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We're not going to talk about the Men in Black any further this time. We're going to keep you curious because, you know, Nick is still doing the final work in the book. He submitted the manuscript, goes through the editorial process. Maybe the Men in Black will visit him.
Yeah, well, if
right.
I do,
just what he wants, right?
That's probably a good accompaniment to the book. So.
Well, it'll certainly make things a lot more interesting.
Yeah, exactly.
It'll be wild, wicked, and woolly. But before we get too wild, wicked, and woolly, let me tell you, neighbors, that on this particular episode, Nick Redfern is going to be talking about his new book, which is called The NASA Conspiracies. Now, NASA conspiracies cover everything from the theory, and as a matter of fact, was very popular in the PowerCast forums, whether the moon landing was staged by NASA for one reason or another, that never really happened, to the faces on Mars, to all sorts of possibilities, real or imagined. The conspiracies could be a dime a dozen. They could be credible. We're going to have to figure out exactly what's going on. So we have two co-hosts. We have Chris O'Brien, and we have Nick Redfern, author of The NASA Conspiracies. I'm Gene Steinberg. And now we're going to ask both of these gentlemen to try to do a chorus. You're in
the Paracast.
Yeah. Jacques Vallée, Bud Hopkins, Brad Steiger, Nick Redfern, Lauren Coleman. You'll find classic and new books by these and many other authors at Anomalous Books, the number one publisher of 14 books on the planet. They specialize in books on UFOs and aliens, Bigfoot and cryptozoology, parapsychology and the paranormal, as well as alternative history, all of which makes Anomalous Books simply phenomenal. Check out their catalog at anomalousbooks.com. That's AnomalousBooks.com.
Hi, this is Tamar from Namecheap. We're a domain name and web hosting company, and we really care about our customers. With domain name purchases, Namecheap offers free SSL and free Whois Guard for a year to protect your identity from spammers. Most importantly, we care about you. If you'd like to learn more, please visit us at radio.namecheap.com, radio.namecheap.com for web hosting and domain name specials. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Namecheap or become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/Namecheap. See you online.
Have you ever felt like the United States government knows way too much about your financial affairs? I continue to hear stories about property seizures, frozen bank accounts, confiscation of stocks and bonds. It makes me wonder if the U.S. citizen will ever again have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Unfortunately, with the Drug and Money Laundering Act, the IRS Revenue Ruling 6045 of 1984, and the Trading with the Enemy Act and Franklin D. Roosevelt's Executive Order of 1933, some precious metal holdings are subject to government intervention. For this reason, Midas Resources has prepared a report explaining the boundaries of trading precious metals privately. Whether if you have any intention of trading with Midas Resources or not, I have instructed my representatives to give this report out free. Call for your free copy at 1-800-686-2237. When investing, always proceed with caution. Again, call 1-800-686-2237. Exercise your legal right to trade metals privately. 1-800-686-2237.
Becoming a modern smoker is now easier and more cost-effective, thanks to LeSig. Traditional smokers the world over love LeSig. E-cigarettes with a look, feel, and taste of real cigarettes, but without the nasty smoke, ashes, or stains. LeSig is powered by revolutionary microelectronic technology. A small, rechargeable battery and unique replaceable cartridge provide all the satisfaction and benefits of smoking without the smoke and all the hazards. See the large variety of LeSig e-cigarette supplies and accessories at LeSig.com. That's LeSig.com. LeSig is competitively priced, comes with the best customer service, a 30-day warranty, and satisfaction guaranteed. What a great gift idea. For a 10% discount, mention GCN when you call 870-518-4307. That's 870-518-4307. Ask for fast, free, same-day shipping. Order online at LeSig.com and use promo code GCN at checkout. That's LeSig.com. LeSig, for today's modern smoker.
Question. What would you rather drink? Acidic water, which burns holes in your body and causes loss of bone mass? Or alkaline water, which promotes high energy and vibrant health? The answer is clear. And if you're drinking acidic water, you're helping cancer cells and bacteria to grow out of control. AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops combine a unique formula of the most alkaline minerals. Using Plasma pH Drops is the best way to alkalize your water and help you get rid of acid and regain your health and energy. Simply put 10 drops in the water you drink to raise the pH to a healthy alkaline level. Most experts agree that the water you drink should be at a pH level of 8 or higher. Disease organisms like bacteria, viruses, or cancer cannot survive in an alkaline high pH environment. Order your bottle of AlkaVision Plasma pH Drops now by going directly to AlkaVision.com. That's AlkaVision.com. Or by calling 269-409-1776. Again, 269-409-1776.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
Nick Redfern, our co-host and our guest, author of The NASA Conspiracies. I'm Gene Steinberg. Chris O'Brien is our co-host. You're in the Paracast. You know, it's not the most important conspiracy, maybe, but I'll bring it up. You see, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, our friendly neighborhood members of the Paracast forums opted to talk about the possibility that there was no moon landing. So the question I'm going to ask Nick Redfern, before we even get to that, I'll create a cliffhanger. Nick, the NASA conspiracies, why did you come to write this book? Did you find that some of these conspiracies are really true?
Yeah, I mean, the whole thrust of the book is an examination of the various theories or conspiracy theories surrounding NASA and everything from UFOs, space on Mars, etc. It's not an upholding of all the theories. It's my sort of examination and conclusions based around an evaluation of the available evidence. And the reason as to how and why I wrote the book was because, you know, a lot of books have been written on single subjects like the face on Mars, like the moon landings, et cetera, or astronaut sightings of UFOs. But what I felt hadn't been done was kind of like an unbiased approach because, you know, most of the books written on did we go to the moon were written from the perspective of, well, no, we didn't. Most of the books written on the face on Mars are written from the perspective of it's definitely, you know, a sculpted face that dates back into the, you know, ancient past. So what I decided to do with this book was to try and present logical arguments in chapter by chapter format that would address the salient points, if you like, so the various conspiracies, and then be able to offer the reader, you know, some sort of meaningful conclusion as to what I felt was going on and how and why. And, of course, one of the most important things is that a lot of people don't realize there are so many different conspiracy theories relative to NASA. You know, we're not just stuck on the face on Mars and did we go to the moon or not. You know, there's dozens of weird stories, which, you know, from book writing perspective is a good thing.
Okay, so we realize that. What about the rumors of the moon landings being faked? Where did that come from?
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of it came in the early 1970s from a man named Bill Kaysing, who actually you know, worked closely with NASA and doing contract work, etc. Now, Kaysing was one of the prime movers, I guess, that got the whole movement going. You know, the notion that the moon landings were faked, primarily due to the fact that NASA, according to Kaysing, did not have the expertise, the technology to safely send people to the moon, land them, and get them back in one piece, you know, with all the hazards that would go along with this. Everything from, you know, outer space radiation, calibrating the landing and takeoff, et cetera, and ensuring they got back, you know, as I said, in one piece. Of course, I think, as I point out, you know, I think one of the issues, one of the most important issues, but it's also one that a lot of people forget, is that there are, you know, there's very good reason to be jaded and suspicious of anything we're told by governments on any issue, because we're so used today to being kind of lied to in sort of almost like a Matrix-style world, you know, where we don't know what to believe or what's going on. You only have to look at things like Iran-Contra, weapons of mass destruction, you know, war on terror, et cetera, to realize that there are so many odd facets to these conspiracies or, you know, realities, however you want to term them, that it's understandable that people would have jaded views on anything that comes out of the mouth of officialdom, shall we say. And I think that's an important factor. I think also, you know, legitimate questions have been raised about certain aspects of the moon landing. The big question is whether or not these legitimate questions have legitimate answers or not. Now, you know, of course, one of the most famous and controversial things that's been brought up about the moon landings is that on one particular mission, where you see the astronauts planting the flag, it seems to wave. Now, of course, in a vacuum, you simply cannot have a waving flag. And a number of books have addressed this issue and, you know, loudly proclaim that, well, you know, the flag moves when the astronaut plants it. And, well, yes, it does. But what a lot of people don't point out is that it only waves when the astronauts are handling it. The flag in the relevant footage is actually on screen for, I think it's like 28 minutes or 31, I forget now. But regardless, it's pretty much half an hour.
Basically, the reason it's waving is because it's physical movement on the part of the astronauts to make it move. It's not because of some unusual force or because it was done in an area where there was a wind. And you kind of think, too, if NASA was that stupid in the first place, they deserve to be caught But wouldn't they allow for that if they were staging this?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can look at it two ways. Some people say that they weren't that stupid, that there were whistleblowers who were trying to get the truth of the matter out. Now, that's not implausible, but I would be far more impressed by this flag-waving story if at any point after the astronauts actually let the flag go after it's planted, it moved even once. And unfortunately for those who say this issue is relevant, it doesn't move. You know, people don't have to take my word for it. The ironic thing is that many of the people who uphold this theory in lectures and conferences only show it moving when the astronauts plant the flag. They fail every time to show the rest of the footage where it's just not moving. And to me, that's an uncritical, biased approach. You know, if you're going to make this claim about the flag having relevance, you should point out that it doesn't move at any other occasion.
Okay, that particular argument doesn't sustain itself. Any other arguments being voiced by the adherents of the moon landing is fake theory?
Yeah, I mean, another one, of course, is this issue of why there are no stars in the sky on many of the, you know, the photographs. And, of course, the conspiracy theorists would argue that NASA simply didn't have the capability to accurately determine where all the stars and the planets would be, you know, in the right place at the right time. And in a worst-case scenario, somebody might realize that they're actually in the wrong place. And so they did the best thing they could do, and that was to, you know, obliterate the stars from the sky. If, you know, if it was filmed on Earth somewhere and then people realize, well, hang on a minute, you know, we're seeing stars from the perspective of where they would be in the Earth's night sky. Now, again, you know, NASA has put forward what I believe to be valid arguments. You know, it's kind of like you're looking up in the sky in the day. Occasionally you'll see the moon. Very occasionally you might see Venus. That does happen occasionally, but you will not see stars. And NASA's view is that, you know, the fact that the sun, you know, is beaming on the moon's surface, and, you know, the lack of an atmosphere, and also the cameras that were being used simply whited out the stars. You know, it was just too bright to actually pick up imagery. Now, of course, then the conspiracy theorists roll their eyes and say, no, there's, you know, that's just not possible. We should be seeing stars. So, in other words, this aspect of the story is an intriguing one, but it's very much like an us versus them type thing where, you know, nobody is satisfied with the other party's answer. But those are two of the main ones.
Got a comment or a question? Send it to news@thepowercast.com. That's news@thepowercast.com. Tell you what, Nick, we're going to break for a second. We have Nicholas Redfern. The book is The NASA Conspiracies. Our co-host is Chris O'Brien. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Powercast. No!
Ray Perkins, a reclusive veteran burned out from the Gulf War, lives tortured by relentless, perplexing nightmares. Nightmares of a horrific battle in deep space and of a mysterious woman suffering in agony for her devastated world. A woman not yet born, calling across centuries to him. Then, a coincidence leads him to his destiny, his chance to alter the universe. Attack! Attack! Of the Rockaways. The former fiction editor for Star Wars and Indiana Jones, Robert Simpson, writes, "The soul of the novel Attack of the Rockaways lies in its heart and passion for building a convincing tale of a love that spans a galaxy. A thrilling story. Attack of the Rockaways is available now. Read a sample chapter and get a special discount off of the cover price at our website, rockoids.com. That's rockoids.com. Attack of the Rockaways, a novel in the grand science fiction tradition.
Pure water. What could be better than the gift of health for your loved ones? And who better to help you give the gift this holiday season than BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com? If those on your gift list are drinking or bathing in unfiltered city or well water, chances are that water is contaminated with rust, bacteria, chlorine, and fluoride. For just pennies a day, Berkey Water Filters remove dangerous contaminants from both well and city water, is powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water, and is great for camping and emergencies. Right now, GCN listeners get 5%
off all ceramic filter systems and free shipping on orders over $50. Purchase any filter system from BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com to get your choice of Berkey Sport bottles, a KDF shower filter, a set of fluoride filters, or the new Sight Class spigot. Absolutely free. Visit BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 877-99-BERKEY today. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY. Give the gift of health at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com today.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, CrossbreedHolsters.com.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
This is Alex Jones with five good reasons you should consider buying a solar power generator. Number one, new climate legislation could easily double or triple your electric bill. Number two, our new energy czar wants to control how much power your electric company allows you to have. It's true. Total government control of electricity in the name of smart grid technology is coming. Number three, in some areas of the country, the power grid is dangerously overloaded. And now, new socialist legislation is only compounding the problem. Number four, dangerous weather is always a threat to local grids. Every year, thousands of families lose their power from weather-related outages. Number five, a solar power generator provides powerful backup insurance and peace of mind. Folks, I really believe in the solar power generators offered by Solutions from Science, one of my oldest sponsors. You can get more information at www.mysolarbackup.com. That's mysolarbackup.com. Remember, the government doesn't own the sun, so go to mysolarbackup.com or call 1-877-327-0365.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Between breaks, ladies and gentlemen, Nick Redfern and Chris O'Brien, our genial co-hosts, are not so genial. They're fighting each other tooth and nail to see who will say the words the Paracast in the most effective fashion. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast, where anything can happen and usually does. The book on the table is The NASA Conspiracies, Nick's new book. And Chris, why don't you pick up on this? Let's pursue the discussion. I guess we're kind of wrapping up the moon landing is fake thing, so let's go on.
Yeah, one of the things that I think you bring up very effectively, Nick, in the chapter on the question of the validity of any arguments that argue against the moon landing is that thousands of people would have to be brought into some sort of loop on that, and it would be very, very difficult to hold something so immense like that secret. And obviously, you know, no one has ever come forward really and as a whistleblower and spilled the beans on any sort of conspiratorial theory like that. So would you like to address that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that is one of the important points, and it says a lot about human nature. I mean, for example, there were more than if you look at NASA and the outside contractors that were involved in, you know, building everything from like life support systems, the computers, etc., there were actually more than 400,000 people worked on the entire Apollo program from its inception when Kennedy made his speech in 62 about going to the moon to when the Apollo missions finished in 72. Now, 400,000 people, you know, if only 1% of that 400,000 were clued in on what really happened, that's still 4,000 people. I mean, look, for example, at how quickly things like Watergate dissolved, Iran-Contra, even the whole weapons of mass destruction fiasco, you know, and we're talking about they just fell apart in weeks or months. You know, the idea that a significant percentage, or even a small percentage of 400,000 people could uphold a conspiracy like this for more than 40 years, in my view, is beyond feasible. Don't get me wrong, I think there's definitely been some interesting books written suggesting we didn't go to the moon, and I would actually urge people to read them to get both viewpoints. But what I do think is that we were beyond having just questionable photographs and theories about the stars in the sky and books written. We would have had at least a few credible people come forward on the record and say, hey, you know, I was one of the people who set up the lights out in the desert when we filmed this at Area 51 or whatever, you know, and I was one of the people who flew in by helicopter the lunar module, and, you know, we landed it down on the ground, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But we don't have a single person. You know, that's why, even with things like the Kennedy assassination, which provokes a lot of controversy, we at least have people coming forward saying, I was the second or the third gunman. We don't even have anybody in the whole NASA field of the, you know, the moon landing saying, I was the second or third cameraman. You know, we just don't have anything like that. And I think that's one of the things that makes this theory, I won't say untenable, but I would say highly unlikely.
Now, doesn't that also augur the same conclusion to the theory that the government knows about UFOs and has the stuff on ice somewhere, because somebody somewhere has to spill the beans? Or am I wrong?
He's got a really good source in the book, the next New York City policeman that came forward and talked to Nick. Maybe you should address that, Nick. That's one of the best, most fascinating parts of the book, I think.
Yeah, this is a very weird story of a guy who I spoke to named John, who was originally in the New York Police Department, and he began working sort of in tandem, not for, but in tandem with the FBI on a spy ring that was supposedly operating in New York, and the police department working with the FBI. And John, you know, very, very elderly guy. This was sort of in the late 50s, early 60s. And he was sort of instrumental in part of this particular program, and when he retired from the police force, was actually offered a job with Wackenhut, who were actually responsible for the security at Area 51 for quite a long time. And it was basically a case of, you know, we were very impressed with the work you did when you were within the police force on this spying operation with the FBI. Would you be interested, now that you're retired, you know, in doing some sort of contract work, or, you know, off the record work, even with Wackenhut, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, he was told that it would give him a good, I guess, outlet in the world of private security, et cetera, which is a very lucrative field, certainly. And he was offered a job working at a secure installation in Nevada, which, with hindsight, we would call today Area 51. He stressed to me, back in around 1969, 1970, when this kicked off, the term Area 51 was never mentioned to him. It's an interesting story because you can look at it from two ways. John was basically briefed by NASA personnel and people from the intelligence community to the effect that at Area 51 there were stored a number of crashed or recovered UFOs, number of alien bodies, and also an extensive body of documentation that new personnel and people working on various projects would, from time to time, be required to review and read as part of their, you know, day-to-day activities. And John was offered a position as like a custodian of these files, and as a result, he was obliged to read them and review them and deeply understand them. And they told a fantastic story of crashed UFOs and strange beings and bodies found in the New Mexico desert and the deserts of Utah and Arizona and all sorts of places in from 1943 onwards, not actually 47, but from the early 40s onwards. And he said from time to time, you know, people would come into his office when he was working out at Area 51 and say, you know, we need to review these files. And John would, you know, pull the files and they'll be reviewed by whoever wanted to review them, then they'd be returned. Now, John quite legitimately had questions. This was a one-year contract, and he said, you know, why was I exposed to these files for a period of 1 year? You know, why was I given access to what would presumably be one of the U.S. government's and NASA's most guarded secrets if I was only with Air 365 days, you know, and that was it? He actually wondered if all this material was actually totally bogus, and it was really kind of like a test, if you like, to test his loyalty. And certainly after that year finished, he was given very sort of prestigious work within the intelligence community, doing outside contract work in security issues, etc. Today, he sort of views it as like a real hall of mirrors. You know, was he exposed to real documentation to Area 51, or was it bogus? You know, and if afterwards, you know, a year or two later, he went running to the New York Times or whatever, or even to the UFO community, you know, he'd be perceived as someone who wasn't a valued person who could, you know, keep secrets, etc. But if he did do that, no real secrets would be compromised. So he's very much in two minds even now in his 80s as to what he was actually exposed to or what he wasn't exposed to. And he was keen to stress he never saw any crashed UFOs or alien bodies in cryogenic storage. It was all documentation that was carefully placed in front of him. And in some respects, you could argue that this very much parallels the whole thing with Bob Lazar. I know a lot of people just outright dismiss Bob Lazar, but his story was almost like this, of deliberately exposing him to certain things, like documentation and craft, allegedly. You know, and I do sometimes wonder if the whole motivation of the Lazar thing was to see if he talked, and if he did, to sort of spread like a meme the idea that there are crashed UFOs at Area 51, and to see then who comes looking. You know, the Russians going to come looking, etc. And if they do, well, maybe we can catch a few spies in the process without actually compromising any real secrets. So I'll be the first to admit the story of John is a fascinating one, because it ties in with NASA, Area 51, crashed UFOs, dead aliens, live aliens. But it could all be some sort of weird, bizarre psychological warfare program to test the loyalty of someone who would later be offered a very lucrative position in private security.
Chris?
Yeah, well, I was just fascinated by some of the details that he came up with in describing some of the documentation. I think there was one instance in there where he mentioned a UFO crash that was investigated by the Air Force in Arizona in the early 50s. And
I wasn't in Arizona in the early 50s, but I have to tell you, we have Chris O'Brien, Nick Redfern, co-host Saul. Nick's author of a new book called The NASA Conspiracies. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
The Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Freudian phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
All types of batteries for all types of gadgets.
We'll say it again.
All types of batteries for all types of gadgets. Electronics, toys, flashlights, computers, accessories, and more are at BatteryStation.com. Whatever type battery you need, alkaline, lithium, gel cell, NiCad, metal hydride, sealed lead acid, and more are at BatteryStation.com. Our homepage gives you quick access to ham, marine, police, fire, and aviation batteries. Plus, choose from our great selection of LED flashlights with no bulb to ever burn out and much longer battery life. Find many top brands, including Streamlight, Pelican, Surefire, Novatec, Gerber, and more at BatteryStation.com. You'll also find the most popular brands of ammunition and watertight cases for storing guns, food, electronics, survival gear, and more at BatteryStation.com. Call 417-257-7799. That's 417-257-7799. You will be surprised when you visit BatteryStation.com.
In a coming-apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, towline, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Men, take control of your prostate health without the risk of nasty side effects with Prostate Secure. Early detection, regular prostate exams, and PSA tests are a must for men over 40. Listen, if you have symptoms of an enlarged prostate but don't want to take a drug with possible nasty side effects, or if you're over 40, then use Prostate Secure, a natural dietary supplement for men. Prostate Secure is a scientifically formulated blend of clinically significant amounts of natural ingredients. It brings together the most powerful plant sterols like beta-cytosterol and saw palmetto, along with antioxidants such as vitamin D3, resveratrol, and lycopene to support good prostate health, proper urinary flow, function, and more. Check out ProstateSecure.com. Order online and save 10% with promo code SAVE10 or call 1-800-239-9432. That's 800-239-9432. Or visit ProstateSecure.com. Take control of your prostate health naturally with Prostate Secure.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
You're in the Paracast. You never know what's going to happen next.
Catch as catch can. That's how we do it here. You know what happens here, because we want equal time. We don't want Chris or Nick, both genial gentlemen, to fight each other from thousands of miles away, because they can do that virtually, because this is a paranormal radio show and anything can happen. Can you imagine, you know, in the 17th dimension, the fisticuffs? Consider the possibilities. The book is called NASA Conspiracies from Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberger in the Paracast. And somehow, how did we get into UFOs from NASA? Curious. Do you think, is any evidence at all, Nick, just to raise the question, put it on the table, that NASA was responding in any way to the UFO situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess it really depends on how you define responding. I mean, one of the things we do know for certain is that, you know, in its very earliest formative years, one of the things that NASA did was to contract a report from the Brookings Institute, became known as the Brookings Report, which essentially was like a study. A lot of people assume it was just about UFOs and aliens. It wasn't. NASA contracted with the Brookings Institute to prepare a report on, you know, a whole range of aspects of NASA's work. And it was actually called Proposed Studies on the Implications of Peaceful Space Activities for Human Affairs, kind of like a long-winded title. But it was prepared and submitted to the House of Representatives in 1961. It was kind of like a study of what, you know, the government could expect from NASA now that it was created and, you know, the forthcoming decades, etc. But one of the most interesting aspects of the report was one titled The Implications of a Discovery of Extraterrestrial Life. And this is important because it potentially, at least, sort of sets the scene for how NASA would respond to the issue of alien life in years to come. For example, there are sections of the report, quite intriguingly, bearing in mind the whole face on Mars controversy, there's one section of the report which talks about, hypothetically, how NASA on some of its future space missions to Mars or the Moon, etc., bearing in mind this is written in 1960, you know, might actually find ancient structures and formations on Mars and on the Moon. You know, which is sort of almost like a chillingly eerie precursor of what happened with the face on Mars. There are also questions asked as to not when the general public should be told about the discovery of alien life, but even if the general public should be told and how it might impact upon belief systems, religion, all sorts of things. Yes, it's certainly the case that the Brookings report was very much hypothetical in the sense of laying out scenarios for NASA in the event that A, B, or C happened. But given the fact that, you know, this was after the 13 years after Kenneth Arnold's sighting and the UFO phenomenon, of course, was in full swing, I think this is an incredibly important document because it demonstrates the way in which NASA was obliged to respond to the nature of alien life. And clearly, NASA was fully aware of the potential social implications of what could happen from a public statement that, yes, UFOs are amongst us, aliens are real, and the impact upon religion, the economy, and everything else. All this was spelled out in the Brookings report, and I don't think it's, you know, entirely coincidental that the response that NASA makes today and has done with respect to UFOs and alien life seems to be driven from that report prepared only like a year or so after NASA's inception.
Now, of course, the story is that the Russians got into space in the 1970s with Sputnik. We have to respond to the Russians. They beat us to outer space. And, of course, President Kennedy states this goal. We will land on the moon in 1969. So the theory being, again, that this was all done because of the Russians. But the implication here, based on the Brookings report and everything you say, is there was a deeper motive all along.
Well, you know, I think you can look at it from both angles. I don't think it's one or the other. I think, you know, it goes both ways. I think there's absolutely no doubt that, you know, when NASA began in its formative years, bearing in mind we were at the height of the Cold War, this wasn't just about scientific exploration. It was about, you know, prestige and America's position on the world stage as it relates to outer space. I mean, yeah, a lot of, you know, America is certainly trumped the Russians massively by landing a man on the moon, or men on the moon in 1969. But, you know, the Russians had launched the first satellite, Sputnik, in 57. They launched the first animal into space. They launched the first human into space, Yuri Gagarin. In that respect, bearing in mind the height of the Cold War, you know, the whole reds under the beds things, when kids were being told at school, you know, when you hear the alarm, put your heads under the desks and, you know, kiss your ass goodbye, so to speak, to find that the Russians were so far ahead, the only real way it could be eclipsed was by, you know, landing a man on the moon. That would be the ultimate, you know, achievement. So I think it was NASA's early days were as much about scientific exploration as they were as increasing America's position on the world stage as it related to the, you know, the early burgeoning ventures into outer space.
Okay, but the other consideration being here that it looks as if, whatever else you think, the emphasis on the space program died not long after we landed on the moon. We got a few more there, and then in the 80s we had the space shuttle program, and if you can believe the current political scuttlebutt, well, NASA is all as good as dead because they're not going to continue the space shuttle. We're looking into private industry to ferry astronauts to the Soviet space stations, et cetera, et cetera. We may not get back to anywhere for another, 20 years or so, except maybe a moon thing?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is an unfortunate thing, is that I think, you know, NASA, when the moon landings occurred, 69 to 72, NASA was really on a cusp of where, well, you know, 10 years from now, if we really push it, we could have like a permanent manned station on the moon. But it was like it all, other than the, you know, the Skylab and then in the early 80s, the space shuttle onwards. Yes, that was, you know, that was great news. And, you know, the idea of having a shuttlecraft that can go back and forth rather than like the Apollo rockets that are just one off, you know, it was a great development. But it was almost as if, you know, as if NASA had sort of taken a step backwards or didn't sort of, you know, jump on this achievement it had made and carry on the impetus and, you know, just keep pushing forward. And I think a lot of people just lost interest. I mean, you know, again, it's one of the sort of ironic things about society is that people lost interest after the first couple of moon landings. It was like, oh, yeah, it's another moon landing. You know, the first one was fantastic, but then after the third one, it was, oh, yeah, they're going to go up and bring a few rocks back and, you know, what time is I Love Lucy on? You know, that's that's how it became, unfortunately. And I think part of it could be public relations, you know, the idea of people not understanding and realizing the sheer importance of the fact that we were no longer tethered to the earth, but a lot of people just did not care. You know, it's kind of like today. There's so much stuff going on in the world today that, you know, a lot of people, I mean, it's a lot of serious, deadly stuff going on, but all people are worried about is, you know, what the latest Hollywood starlet's up to and whatever. And I think that's something that parallels what was going back on in the 70s with, you know, the Apollo programs, etc., that people just didn't care that much, unfortunately. It was just, oh, yeah, that's interesting the first time, and after that it was, well, so what? And I think, you know, NASA needs to find a way to galvanize the public, the media, and the government. You know, a lot of people in governments just want to shut down a lot of NASA programs today. You know, I think it's an incredible thing that we could one day send men to Mars, women to Mars, and find out the truth about the face on Mars. But, you know, it's almost like, well, what's Paris Hilton up to?
Okay, so the politicians, you know, the politicians, they don't know what's going on then. That's why they want to shut NASA down?
Well, I think a lot of it is, it's just ignorance. You know, it's like, you know, I see people like certain politicians from Alaska who know nothing. They know nothing, and they want to run for president. You know, and that's, they don't take the time to find out the important things. And I think that's what's happening with NASA. You know, NASA could be, has the potential to be such a groundbreaking, powerful agency, taking us to sort of such an uncharted realms. But for many people, it's just like, oh, yeah, well, they went to the moon 40 years ago, but what have they done since? And I think there's, I think a lot of people, you know, I think it's wrong, but I think a lot of people do view it like that. It's like, should we really be doing stuff in outer space when, you know, half the nation's 300 pounds and diabetic and crime's out of control or whatever, you know, it shouldn't we be trying to clear
right, and trillion-dollar defense budgets.
You yeah, know, exactly. We'll get into the politics, and we can't get away from politics when you talk about NASA because it's a political agency, folks. And you can't get away from our forums because they consume so much a part of what we do on the Paracast. Go to forum.paracast.com. That's forum.paracast.com. We have Nick Redfern, author of A NASA Conspiracies. Chris O'Brien is our other co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in.
The Paracast. Yes, you are.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNlive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNlive.com. Again, that's GCNlive.com.
The people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it led back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.